The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
The subject this evening is health and nutrition, insights from the Torah. There's a wealth of material on this subject discussed in various places of the Talmud and various writings of the sages. We'll try to cover a small portion of this evening in the time allocated. Firstly, as a preface, there are four, well, we'd like to make mention of four major principles which are mentioned by the sages. Thank you. And if we can understand these principles, it will help us a long way in understanding how the human body functions and how to take care of it. Firstly, man, even though he can be subdivided into many parts, but he is just one. The Torah tells us in Bereishis Beis, Pasuk Vov, Pasuk Zayin, Vayitzar Hashem Elokim Es HaOdom, Hashem created man, Ofer Min HaAdomah, dust from the earth, Vayipach Ba'apav Nishmas Chaim, and he blew into his nostrils a living soul. And man became a living being. So here we see that man was made both from the dust of the earth, this is physical man, and he was given a soul from above, this is spiritual man. But even though that these two dimensions are seemingly totally contrary to each other, nevertheless, from this synthesis, from the merging of these two forces, came out one man. Not two men, but one man. Our sages further subdivide man into basically 3 to 4 parts. For example, there is man, the guf, the physical body of man. There is the nefesh, which has its center in the heart, which is the emotional forces of man. Then there is the seichel, which its central point is the brain, which is the mental, which houses the mental forces of man. And the spiritual man, there's the soul, the neshama, which also attaches itself to the brain, in an area where we don't know because it's spiritual, but this is its connection to man. So man can be subdivided, and each division of man gives forth its own forces. But nevertheless, man is only one. He works only as a unit. He was merged into one being. Not into two beings, and not into 3 or 4 beings, but into one being. Into a perfect synthesis. This means that there is nothing that can take place in any area of man, be it physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual, that will not send ripples and effects into every other area of man. Because he is a total perfect synthesis. We'll give a few examples on this. Many times we find by ourselves a person can have a great spiritual enjoyment and physically he feels better or he feels stronger. A person can receive some inspiration which can be classified as emotional or spiritual and physically he feels better. He can receive encouragement from someone or he becomes full of joy for some reason, or someone tells him some things which raises his self-esteem. Now this is all in the area of the emotions, and physically he feels better. To the contrary, if he's sad, or if he's humiliated, if he's pessimistic, if he's depressed, or he's confronted with failure, these are emotions. But physically, actually physically, he will feel down. Well, I'm not speaking here of figments of the imagination, but or actual, there is actual cause and effect. In the sages and in the writings of the Torah, there are many, many indications and examples of this. We'll cite some. The Moreh Brachos brings that if a person is a Baal Aveira, if he does a lot of Aveiras, now we're speaking from the spiritual plane, this will cause a fright in the person. It will cause him to lose confidence in himself, to be afraid. Amrocha shever chatzi aguf. More than another place tells us, grief physically breaks half the body. Right? Now, grief is an emotion. It's not biological, it's not physical, but will cause biological effects. The Torah tells us in Parshas Toldos, when Yitzchok wanted to bless his son, well, he wanted to bless Esav at that time. So he told him, "Va'asu li matamim kasher aftei, va'afti ve'avir li ve'echelo va'avur tivorecha chonavshi." Go out and hunt. Bring me some food and prepare it. Bring me some game. Come on. Bring me some game and prepare it the way I like it. And I will eat it. And then I will be able to bless you. Now, what did the food have to do with blessing of Esav, or of Yaakov, how it was in the end? The blessing was spiritual. To give a blessing from one man to another is spiritual. So what does it have to do with the eating of the food? And the answer is very simple. That the Gemara tells us that Tev Lev Yevorech. You want to bless a person? You have to be of good heart in your own right. You have to be of good heart and joy. And you want to feel close to a person? You have to have a good heart towards him. The best way to be of good heart is to eat something which you enjoy, and especially if you receive it from that person. And then, Bavur, I will be able to bless you. So here we see a physical cause which causes a spiritual effect. In Malachim Beis, the Gemara brings this in various places. Peregimel, Elisha was angry, and the Shekhinah departed from him. So he said, "V'ato kichuli managin, v'hayekinagin a managin, v'tiyalov yad Hashem." Bring to me a musician, and let him play music for me. And the music will dispel my anger and grief, and I will become joyous, and the Shekhin and the Holy Presence will return to me. Now he was speaking of a Holy Presence, of a Shekhinah. He was speaking of a Shekhinah, which is totally spiritual. Yet, he was asking for music, which is something of a physical or an emotional nature, in order to cause a spiritual effect. And the Gemara, in Psachim Kuf Yud Zayin, says on this, "In Ashchina Sheire Lemitech Atzlus, or Atzfus, Ischeiku Kalis Reish," or Dvorim Metelim, that if a person wants to enjoy the Holy Presence, he wants to be close to the Almighty, so if he feels very physically sluggish, or emotionally depressed, or emotionally lightheaded, or if he's in a situation of idleness, then the Shekhinah will not dwell upon him. Now, this what we mentioned are all physical or emotional states. They're all physical or emotional states, and at the same time, we're speaking here of a spiritual effect. elamitoik simcha shel mitzvah. But if he has a true joy in himself, then he can bring the Shekhinah upon himself. Another example. In Parshas Vayetze, when Yaakov was fleeing from his home, which we just learned, because of the fear of Esav, and he went to sleep, and he had a dream, and there HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised him security. He said, I will watch you, I will guard you. So it states, Vayiso Yaakov Raglo Vayelech Atzu B'nei Kedem. Yaakov lifted up his feet, and he proceeded on his journey to the east. So Rashi brings from Medrash Rabbah, Mishnis Baser Vesura Teva, Shehuftach Bishmira, Nasaliba Yasragle Vanase Kalalechas. That once he heard the good news, the Vesura Teva, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to guard him and take care of him, his feet became light, and he was able to pursue the journey with a much greater easiness and quickness. Now he heard some good news. That is either spiritual or emotional. But all of a sudden, physically, he felt light, and the journey was easy for him. This is another example. Or, for example, David HaMelech said in the Tehillim Baruchi Nafshi, Yayin Yisamach Levav Enosh. Wine will cause joy to the heart of man. Wine is something which is physical. Joy is something which is emotional. Mora brings a case, Le'achalti Bishwa de Tura Esmol, where someone had difficulty understanding a sugis agemora, a topic in the Gemara, and he explained why, because he usually ate, the night before, he would eat meat of an ox, and the night before he wasn't able to. And therefore his mind was not working so well. Now here we're speaking about understanding Gemara, and he's talking about eating the meat of an ox. Or the Gemara says, Chitin yofel Talmud. Grain, wheat, is good for the understanding of Torah. So we have countless cases, both in our experiences of everyday life and in the words of the sages. Or another example that we'll be learning in the coming parshas, in Vayigash, Batchi Ruach Yaakov, when they came and they told Yaakov, O Joseph Chai, that Joseph is still alive, it says, Batchi Ruach Yaakov. Yaakov became alive again. Now, he became alive, he became full of life. To become full of life, this is physical. This was because of the news that Joseph was still alive. So we have countless examples of this. And the key to this is is because man, even though he can be sexualized and departmentalized, but he's not a person of many sections or departments, but he's a synthesis, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu took all of these areas and made one being out of man. And therefore it's impossible that there should be any effect coming from one area of man that will not affect another area of man. And that's why we see that many times something can happen to a person mentally, and biologically there are changes, or biologically and mentally there are changes. Now actually, doctors are aware of this. They're becoming more aware of it all of the time. The traditional area of medical doctors is biology, the physical makeup of man. The traditional area of psychology are emotions, the emotional makeup of man. Today, and it's becoming very confusing many times, that we see that these two areas become more interrelated all of the time. For example, we have what is known as the psychosomatic disease. It's a disease which has biological symptoms, but its causes are emotions. And not only that,
Not only that, but there are many, many diseases which till now were traditionally understood as purely biological diseases. And today, we are understanding that really they have emotional or mental causes. And to the converse, there are many other diseases that were traditionally understood to be of emotional or mental nature, which today we are discovering are biological, are from chemical imbalances in the body. Now, in actuality, the cause is in one area, but the results can be in any area. There can be a chemical imbalance in the body, which is biological, but the cause could be an emotional cause. There could be an emotional imbalance in the body, but the cause could be a physical cause. And it could work at any area, from the spiritual to the emotional, to the mental, to the emotional, to the physical. If it's going to be cured, then it'll have to be cured at its source. If the symptom will be treated, you might be able to relieve the person of his symptoms, but you're not curing the disease. And the symptoms will come back, or they will manifest themselves in a different area. So this means that the cause is in one area of the body, one area of the individual. But it will manifest itself, and it has to manifest itself throughout the entire human being, since the human being is one and is not separate departments. Actually, because of that, there's entire new fields of medicine opening up. For example, there are many, many diseases which clinically were never related necessarily to diet. And today, in medical centers all over the world, all kind of new findings are coming out to relate many major diseases to diet and nutrition. This is a case where the cause was in one area, but the manifestations were in totally a different area. And there's another new area. This is a new pioneering area in medicine, which is known as stress-related diseases. There were many major diseases, especially of Western culture, such as heart disease, cancer, hypertension, strokes, and so forth, that were always clinically accepted to have biological causes. And today, more findings are found out, are being discovered every year from major medical centers. That not so. But the cause can be emotional or mental, even in these diseases which we know have definite biological imbalances. And this is the area of the stress-related diseases. And this is a classical example of what we're saying. And so is it in regards to cures. Doctors are finding out all of the time that even though traditional ways of curing various sicknesses, biological sicknesses, were through biological medicines, they're finding out that there are other means that greatly assist in the curing of the patient. For example, there's all kind of papers being written now how happiness can assist in the cure, how laughter can assist in the cure, how spirit, the will to get well. If a patient doesn't want to get well, the medicine won't make him well. If he has a tremendous will to get well, he'll get well better. Or many doctors are aware of what they call tender loving care, that they find patients get well quicker. If there's a tender loving care given from nurses and sisters, then in other circumstances. Now, what does this have to do with biological diseases? In fact, the studies were done on babies, where babies became sick, very sick, if they were brought up with the best of medical attention, but no mother to give them love. Now, we shouldn't think that this is something which is difficult to fathom, difficult to understand, because in everybody's life, in our own life, every day and every minute, we are actually experiencing what we could call mind over matter. An example. There are countless thoughts that take place in a person's life daily or even hourly that will cause countless biological and chemical changes in his own body. An example, if a person thinks of food, or something very delicious to eat, there will be numerous biological changes that will go on into his body. I don't even know if all the biological changes can be measured as of yet. If a person will think of something which is relaxing, again, actual biological changes will take place in his body. If a person will think of hatred, or if he'll think of revenge, or of war, or different types of fighting, other changes, physical changes, will take in his body. If he thinks of love, if a person will think of a sexual thought, there are countless biological changes that take place immediately. Yet here the cause was totally mental or emotional, and the result was totally biological. Actually, the Gemara in Masechta Gittin, where the Gemara tells when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai came out of Yerushalayim to negotiate with the general of the Romans who had laid siege to the city. So he called him emperor, called him the Caesar. So he said, "I'm not the Caesar. You have no right to call me that." So he says, "You are." Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu had promised that he would only give over Israel into the hands of a king. Therefore, you couldn't be a general, you would be a Caesar. Meanwhile, he had put on one of his boots. And a messenger came and brought him news from Rome that the Caesar died and he had become the Caesar. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's prophecy was correct. Then he found he couldn't take the boot off. For some reason he couldn't get the boot off. So Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai told him, he says, "That's because of the good news you received." See, it states good news is touching bosser, makes the flesh fatter. And that's why you can't take your boot off. So he says, "So what should I do?" He says, "Well, think of something that will give you a fright, and you'll be able to take the boot off." And this is what he did. And a doctor medically explained this to me. See, medically explained it. There's expansion of the blood cells, there's constriction of the blood cells. It all depends on various emotions that go through the body. This topic that we're speaking about this evening, I gave about 6 months ago in Durban. And there was a professor of medicine present. And after the shiur, he came to me and he said, "It's interesting what you said, because," he said, "we made tests on students." He says, "What the greatest cause, one of the greatest cause of physical stress, physical, biological stress, is running up and down steps." So they had students run up and down steps until they were exhausted. And then they took their blood pressure and other types of clinical tests of which they could measure the biological stress. And it registered at a certain number. Then they put them through grueling mental and emotional stress, no physical stress, but mental and emotional stress. And again, they measured the biological changes, the physical changes in the body, and the number had doubled. The number had doubled, which was a great finding to them, that emotional stress causes greater physical change in the body than physical stress itself does. This is what he told me after the shir. And with this in mind, we can't close our eyes to the great social diseases which plague the Western culture. You know, we have broken homes and child abuse and drugs and alcohol and so forth, suicide and so forth and so on. But we cannot ignore this completely and close our eyes to it, because many of these social stresses and social diseases also, not all of them, but many of them, can be effects of causes that happen in the person in other areas, right, that can drive a person to such things. There are more in Shulchan Aruch and other poskim, other codifiers. In Chelek Aleph of Or HaChaim, we have a brocha that we make, which is called Asher Yotzer HaSadon B'Chochma, that after one digests his food, the food is eaten, it's digested, the wastes are eliminated, and the good is put into the body for nourishment. We say a praise to the Almighty, Asher Yotzer HaSadon B'Chochma, that you have created man with such wisdom. And we end the bracha by saying, "Umaflia la'asois," that man is such a wonder. Maflia pella means a miracle. So the Ramah, Rabbi Shisulis, and other Peskin, they want to understand what is the miracle that we're referring to. A miracle means something that we cannot understand naturally. Something that we can explain clinically and naturally, that is not classified as a pella, as a miracle. Although it's miracles, but that's not classified as a pella. A pella means a miracle we cannot understand. What is it that we cannot understand in the digestive processes of the body that's called a pella? So they explain as follows. This is what we cannot understand. When a person eats, he's eating physical food. But he's not only nourishing physical man, he's nourishing spiritual man also. Because if a person doesn't eat, not only does man become sick, but his soul also will become sick. If a person fasts, not only does he fall physically, but he falls spiritually also. When he eats and strengthens his body, he's strengthening his soul also. This means that the body is capable, just as it extracts thousands of components from food and delivers it to all parts of the human being, physical being, that's necessary. It's wise enough also to extract a spiritual nourishment from a physical food and distribute it to the soul. This is a pella. This is a miracle. This is something that we cannot understand. Again, we see this total oneness, this total synthesis. And we see that if man, if he would die spiritually, then physically he would die. The spirit would depart, physically he would die. If he would die physically, then spiritually also he would die. If a man wants to kill his spirit, let him kill his body. And he'll see how quickly he will kill his spirit. And that's because man is one and he's inseparable. And therefore every area must have an effect on the other. That's the first great principle that a person must understand if he wants to understand himself. Second great principle, and that is, we must learn to recognize just how great a person is. Even though a person is human, and he has his shortcomings, and he has his frailties. But at the same time, we must learn to recognize just how great the human being is. It states, when the Almighty created man, he was the only creation which is created with two yuds, Vayitzar. Two yuds, which is the Almighty's name, was placed in the creation of man, which means that he was created for this world and for the next world. He was given a power to live into two worlds, physical and spiritual. He was created, Betzelem Elakim, in the image of the Almighty. He was made as a king of this world. And when we speak of praises of the man, we do not merely mean spiritually. We mean physically also. The rabbis teach us that physically also, man is the masterpiece of the Almighty. Not like someone to think that physically you have animals also, you have horses, you have donkeys, you have dogs. Man is different, he was given a soul. Not so. Man is different because he was given a body and a soul. And the body of man also was given only to man, to no other creature. And the symbol to this is because the sages tell us, why are there 613 mitzvahs in the Torah? Because there are 613 different parts of the human physical being. There is so many different limbs of the person. There are so many different nerves and muscles of the person. So some correlate with the positive commandments and some correlate with the negative commandments. Now here we're talking a physical man, not a spiritual man. So we see that man was created not only as a, not only spiritually supreme, but also physically supreme. And therefore, a person must have a great respect for the human being, for others, and for himself. And this is something also that doctors are finding out. They always knew, but they're finding out more and more all of the time, the wonders of the human being. To the point where they write that one small part of the brain, the tiniest part of the brain, could be packed in there a more complex, sophisticated machine than the supercomputers that were used to bring rockets to the moon. And also, the powers, the curative powers of the body, the resilience of the body. For the body, we abuse the body all of the time, but the body constantly struggles to cure itself, to bring life back to itself, to bring health back to itself. So second great principle is that we must have a lot of their heritage and respect for the human being, for ourselves, but not merely at the spiritual plane. That for sure, not merely at the spiritual plane. But even at the physical plane. A third principle, and that is, our sages tell us in many places, that we must try to always seek a perfect balance. The human being was created by the Almighty, who is Sholem V'Tomim, who is perfect and without any imperfection, any shortcoming. Perfection means balance. Perfect balance, perfect harmony, this is perfection. If something leans to a right side or to a left side, then it's off balance. Sages always tell us, avoid extremes. Look for the center. Look for a perfect harmony, a perfect balance. Moderation. Because if it becomes too much of one thing, it's off balance. Too little of one thing is off balance. Now this is a principle which is in every area. Every area. Fact is, generally, the sages tell us that principles work in every area, be it physical or emotional or mental or spiritual. They just have to be adapted appropriately. But in every area, we find this in spiritual. States Torah Hashem Tamima, Torah is perfect. It's not to the right, it's not to the left. We find Yaakov Avinu, he was the third of the Oves, because one was to the right and one was to the left, and Yaakov was the perfection of them. States Torah was given in a third month, because the third always represents a balance. One is to one side and another is to another side, and the third brings it together. Even in time, this we are taught, we find that the Yom Tovim, which are the days of Kiddush, of sanctity, come in Nisan, Pesach, and in Tishrei, in Rosh Hashanah. And that's the time when the balance is perfect between the day and night. When we come to extreme times, when the sun is in its intensity, summer, or when the night is in its intensity, the winters, there we find we have Tamas and Ov, or we have Tevis. And so is it with the human body, at the physical level. One will notice that the body itself always rebels against extremes, and always rebels against sudden change. For example, if a person, the body is not happy if it's in a very cold place. It's not happy if it's in a very hot place, a very wet place, a damp, or very dry. Or sudden changes, extreme changes. We know extreme changes brings weakness to the body. And a sudden rapid change can bring shock to the system. If we examine the human body, we'll see the body constantly, under every situation, battles to retain perfect balance. No matter what external temperature there might be, the body will battle to retain a constant internal temperature. No matter what type of external dampness or dryness there might be, the body will battle to retain a constant humidity. And if you take the body into various external changes, it will just have to battle more. In one of the Rishonim, says that basically the source of all sicknesses is merely an imbalance in the body. An imbalance in the body of the chemicals or whatever it might be causes sickness. So this is another very important principle, and that means that man is a miraculous creation working in a perfect order and balance and harmony. At every level, at each level individually, and at each level together as a synthesis. And in all realms, a person must constantly avoid extremes and seek moderation, harmony, and balance. And now one more principle. And this is, when it comes to caring for one's physical health, what perspective of mitzvah do we find in this? The Rambam writes at the beginning of Perek Dalet of Hilchos Deos, Ho'il v'yeis ha'guf bori v'sholem midarkei Hashem hi. Since that one should have a healthy and a total strong body is from the ways of the Almighty. Because it is impossible for a man to understand. It's impossible for a man to understand or to study anything that has to do with the Creator, and he is sick. לפיכך צורך להרחיק עודם עצמי מדבורים המעבדים את הגוף. Therefore, a person must distance himself from anything which might be a destructive influence on the body. Ulahanig atzmin bedvorim hamavrin bahamachlimim, and conduct himself only in those things which constantly bring strength and health to the body. This is what the Rambam writes in the beginning of Perek Dalet of Hilchos Deos. Now, what do we see from here? Firstly, we see that to keep a person, to keep himself physically healthy, this is mitzvah, and it's midarkei Hashem. This is from the ways of Hashem. Secondly, the Rambam goes further to say that it's impossible, he writes. He says it's efshur, it's impossible for a person to understand the wisdom of the Almighty, the ways of the Almighty, and he is sick. So this is something to fathom, that it's impossible for a person to understand the ways of the Almighty and he is sick. Now from here we see even further that not only is it a mitzvah for him to keep himself healthy, but if he doesn't fulfill this mitzvah, then he's going to put himself in a situation where he will not be able to understand the ways of Hashem. In other words, if he will not keep himself healthy, then it will be impossible for him to study Torah. It will not be possible Torah by him. The Rambam writes further at the end of Perek Gimel. He writes as follows: Hamanig atzmai al pi harafua, someone who conducts himself in accordance to good health. Shegufei sholem vechozok, in order that his body should be healthy and strong. Kedei shi'anafsho yishora ladasas Hashem, in order that his spirit will be upright, in order to know Hashem. She'efshe shi'ovin v'istakel b'chokmeis v'hu rov v'cheila. It's impossible for him to understand and to meditate in the wisdom, and he's famished, or he's sick, or he has pain in one of his limbs. Therefore, a person who keeps himself strong and healthy, in order that his spirit should be strong, in order that he can serve Hashem, this person is Eger Hashem Tomid. He serves Hashem all of the time. Even when he sleeps, Afil Bishoshu Yoshem, even when he's asleep, if he sleeps in order to rest himself, in order that he should not become sick, and if he becomes sick, he won't be able to serve Hashem, then even this sleep is serving the Almighty. Now here, from here, we see even further, and this is something that we must emphasize. The Rambam writes us that amiyut bibriyas haguf, a deterioration or a diminishing of the strength of the body is a deterioration and a diminishing of avedas Hashem, of serving Hashem. Someone who lets his health deteriorate, then he's allowing his service to Hashem to deteriorate. Someone who diminishes his strength, he's diminishing his strength to serve Hashem, to fulfill mitzvahs, and to understand the wisdom and Torah of Hashem. So from here we see even more that this mitzvah of caring for one's physical health is not only one mitzvah of the Torah. This is a mitzvah which will bring him to all of the other mitzvahs of the Torah. And the aveira, the transgression of caring for one's health, is an aveira that will bring him to bitul shel kol mitzvah shel Torah. It will bring him to the transgression and the lack of fulfillment of all of the other mitzvahs of the Torah. Because if he's a sickly person, then how can he serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu? If he cannot serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then he is not fulfilling the mitzvahs of the Torah. So in the perspective of this fourth principle, we must be very aware that physical health plays a great, great role in the Torah and in the Jew's life. Unfortunately, it's not emphasized enough. And this is something which must be emphasized to everyone, and particularly Talmidim of Yeshiva, students of Yeshiva. Many times, students go to yeshivas, and their health, they abuse their health, and they let their health deteriorate, and they think it's mitzvah. It's not mitzvah, but it's great avera. Someone who's very strong and can put in long hours day after day in the study of Torah, that's a great mitzvah. But to the point where it deteriorates one's health, it's a great avera, because eventually that will lead him to the forsaking and the leaving of Torah and mitzvahs, either willfully or unwillfully. And this is something that I have seen all of the time, and we'll speak a little more about that later. At any rate, so we mentioned four general principles when it comes to understanding physical health, and that was firstly that man is a synthesis. You cannot treat him as a with a departmentalization, and anything that will, the source can happen at any level or area, but the manifestations will spread itself through all of man. Secondly, we must have very great respect for our bodies, not only for our souls, but for our bodies also, because this is the supreme creation that the Almighty put into this world. Thirdly, with the handiwork of Hashem, and Hashem is Tomim, he's perfect. There is no imbalance in Hashem. He's neither to the right or to the left. He is perfect. Balance. He's perfect in balance and harmony. And everything that he made in this world, be it at a spiritual plane or at a physical plane, functions at its best in this plane. Therefore, we must avoid extremes, sudden changes, rapid changes, and look for a balance. And fourthly, that the mitzvah of caring for one's health is not a mitzvah protis, it's not an individual mitzvah, but it's a foundation that brings a person, gives him the capability of fulfilling all of the mitzvahs of the Torah and understanding the greatest wisdom. Deterioration of health, likewise, will bring to the deterioration of all of the mitzvahs, of serving Hashem, and of understanding the Torah and wisdom of Hashem properly. Now, to go into a few particulars in this subject, I'd like to again mention four areas of a particular vein. These are four areas that again our sages have placed a great deal of emphasis on when it comes to one caring for his health. And they are: one, achilo, eating; two, nekovav, the elimination processes; three, malocha, physical labor and exercise; and four, shino, sleep. As I mentioned, there's a wealth of material in the sages on all of this. Tonight, we'll only be able to touch on some of this superficially, but let's see what we can do. Now, in these four areas, a great deal of the information and sources that we'll use will be from the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos, which is Perek Dalet. But the sources of the Rambam basically are in the Gemaras. In regards to eating, as a preface to this, the Rambam writes, "V'reiv achaloyim sheboim al ha'odem, the majority of diseases which come upon a person einam ela b'bnei macholim roim, are basically the majority of diseases which come upon a person are basically from bad foods." Or even from good foods when he overeats. Again, the majority of diseases that come upon a person, the Rambam writes, are from eating habits, poor eating habits. Either from eating bad foods or from eating good foods but overeating, overstuffing oneself. And this is something for our Western culture. And this is what King Solomon said in his wisdom. Someone who guards his mouth and his tongue will guard himself from many, many tzoris, from many, many afflictions. And the Chazal say on that, what does it mean, his mouth and his tongue? If he guards his mouth from eating not the way he should eat, bad foods, or eating too much of even good foods. And if he guards his tongue from speaking that which he should not speak, then he will guard himself, mitzoris nafshoi, from a great many afflictions. Alright, this is a preface to the importance of eating. Now, quantity. Let's deal first with quantity. Rambam writes, La'elam la'yechal la'odam ela kishurov. Never should a person eat. We're talking about healthy people. If a person is sick, alright, then the body is off balance. So then other is going to have to see a doctor on how to conduct himself. But normal healthy people, this goes for everything that we're saying. Normal healthy people, la'ilam la'yech la'odam elek shurov. He must never eat unless he's hungry. V'la'yishta elek shutzame. And he must never drink unless he's thirsty. This means, now again, the body likes balance, it likes stability. In this balance means routine. We'll speak about that. The body loves routine. People have definite times to eat. But sometimes comes breakfast time or lunch time or supper time and we're not hungry. But we figure it's time to eat, that we must eat. Or sometimes we don't eat our normal amount because we're not hungry, but we feel we should and we should, so we eat it. This is wrong. Person must never eat unless he's hungry and never drink unless he's thirsty. Overeating to the body is the same as a sam amovis, as a venomous, deathly poison. And this is the main root, the main source of disease. Now from here, we hear that we have to cut down, we shouldn't eat so much. But we hear also something else. We must learn to listen to our bodies. Kodesh Baruch Hu created the body, it's a miracle of miracles. It speaks to us. And we must learn to listen to the bodies. If the body tells us he's not hungry, then he's not hungry. If he's not thirsty, then he's not thirsty. And this is body language. Body constantly, every minute of the day, sends us messages, sends us instructions. If you look at little children, when they're very little, they listen to their body. Okay? They're very little. Animals, generally, listen. Now, man was given a seichel, a mentality. That means he cannot only listen to his body, he has to temper it with mentality. So therefore we have to know when to listen and when not to. But with that, with our wisdom, we must understand when to listen to the body. Many, many times, people will eat because they're very, very hungry, and they feel they should eat. Right? If a person is hungry, this is a sign he should eat. But sometimes there can be false signals also. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch writes, in a place, a very good sign. He says, if a person is sitting in a room and he's hungry, and it's been a good few hours since he's eaten, so then he must go eat. The body is sending messages. But sometimes we're sitting in a room, we're not hungry at all. We walk into the kitchen, and we smell what's roasting in the oven. All of a sudden, oh, I'm hungry, I'll sit down to eat. See? That's a false message. That comes from an outside stimulus. There we must use our wisdom not to listen. Many times, people become agitated. They become agitated. They need something to eat. They need something to drink. Why? They ate just an hour ago. I'm famished. I must eat. But they see it's because of agitation. So that's a false message again. Many times people become very fatigued, and they find out that they're nashing, they're eating, they're drinking, right, left, and center. Medical people are right that when a person is fatigued, the whole nervous system is not operating at top level. So messages become all confused. You could be getting messages that you're hungry and you're not hungry. Sometimes people will come home from an affair at night. They will go out to some function, and there they'll have a 6 or 7 or 8 course meal. And they come home, and they're all excited or agitated or whatever it might be. And they'll say, I'm hungry, I must have something to eat. Then they think, maybe I shouldn't, but I'm hungry, I should eat. If they use wisdom, you don't eat. If you didn't eat for 5 or 6 hours and you're hungry, so it's a sign that the body is telling you. But how can the body be telling you? See. So therefore we must learn to listen to our bodies in regards to everything, but at the same time we must temper it with our own wisdom. This is a Gemara in Gittin. A person should never eat his entire fullness. He shouldn't eat until he can't move away from the table anymore. But he should eat about 3/4 of his capacity. 3/4 of his capacity, and then move away from the table. Tzorech odem leechel b'yemei sachamo, shnei shlishim, mashu eichel b'yemei sakshomim. In the summertime, a person should eat less than in the wintertime. In the summertime, he should eat about 2/3 of what normally he eats in the wintertime. So if in the wintertime he should eat 3/4 of his capacity, and the summertime he should eat 2/3 of his normal eating in the winter, that comes out a half. That means that in the winter he should eat about 3/4 of his capacity and then move away from the table, and in the summertime he should eat about half of his capacity and then move away from the table. And on this, the Rambam writes that achila gasa, overeating, gluttonous to the body, is a deadly poison. Buhu ikr lechol achaloim, and this is the source, he says, of most diseases. All right, that's in regards to quantity. In regards to types of food, the Rambam writes as follows. Ela yosi malibe she'echle v'yishte kedei laharbis gufe ve'yvore bilvad. When a person eats, his intent should be to eat for nutrition. His intent should be to eat lekiyum haguf, to strengthen the body, for nutritious reasons. Now naturally, and this our sages tell us, a person must take joy from his food. We make a brocha, we give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the food should be prepared nicely, with taste. It should be served nicely, kishulchan aruch. But the intent of the eating should be lahar beis gufay ve'irav evore bilvad, for the sake of nutrition, to strengthen his body. Therefore, lo yechal kol she'acheich misaveh. He should not eat. When he comes to choose foods for himself, he must choose them for their nutritional value. He must not choose them for their taste value. And it's interesting what the Rambam writes on taste value. He says, kekelev v'chamor, like the dog and the donkey. The dog and the donkey will choose food in accordance to taste value. But an odom, a man who is given wisdom, his choice of foods must be in accordance to nutritional value, health value. He must eat foods which are good for the body, regardless of whether they're bitter or sweet. And he should not eat foods which damage the body, even though they taste very, very good. Now, what do we hear from here? This. That when a person chooses foods, a man or a woman goes to the supermarkets and looks at all of the foods on the shelf. They must look for foods of nutritional value. They must distance themselves from foods which damage the person. And they must look for foods which are more natural, because today we live in a very artificial climate. I think we better just close it a bit. It's getting too drafty. Now we live in our Western culture, and we have the food industry. We can't blame though the food industry more than any other industry of the Western culture. Now, there are, incidentally, some food industries that have become great pioneers in nutrition today. And people are becoming more aware of this all of the time. But I'm speaking in general. What is Western culture today? First of all, it's profit motivated. A. B. It's commercialization, industrialization, artificialization. Fast foods, depleted of natural nourishments, advertisements, additives, preservatives, colorings. This is Western culture eating habits. In America, they have a saying that you package anything properly and you can sell it. There was once a cartoon of a little broken down shack with a sign, pickle factory. Next to it was a modern 70 story skyscraper with a sign, promotional department. They were promoting the pickles. Today we come under enormous pressures of just to the contrary. When we go look for foods, we're under the pressure of this promotion because of profit motives or because of industrializations, where the foods have to last long with preservatives or additives to make it look good, with artificial trappings, advertisements, colorings, and so forth. This is just contrary to what the Rambam was saying. A man once told me he was involved in health food industry. He told me, he said that be careful when you walk into a health food store, because there is much more fraud there than when you go into a supermarket. I said, what do you mean? He says, very simple. He says, when you go into a supermarket, he says, they sell taste. That's what they're selling. They're selling taste. People buy foods in supermarket because they taste good. So he says, you cannot fraud people on taste. If it doesn't taste good, they won't come back and buy it again. So there's very little margin of fraudulence. And that's why that each industry uses all types of spices or whatever it might be, or additives, to bolster this taste. But when you go into a health food store, they are selling on the basis of nutrition. How do you know if it's nutritious or not? Because they tell you, beware. See? This is interesting, that we must realize that our basic motive of shopping today is taste. And the Rambam calls that kekelev kechamor. That's the way a dog or a donkey eats. He looks at taste. A man should look at nutritious value. Now this is something very, very important. for all of us. That's A. B, for women to know, because generally they represent the management of the food of a home. C, when it comes to children. Children must be directed. Chanei chanar al pi darkei gam ki yaskin lo yosr mimenu. The way you educate a child in his youth, this is what he's going to carry with him all of his life into his old age. If you educate him in healthy eating habits, he will carry this his whole life. And a mother will be giving strong, lengthy days to her child. If you educate him in junk food and in garbage, then he will carry this through his whole life. Recently, not long ago, there was an article in the newspaper written by various researchers of the enormous amount of emotional and learning problems of children in school, which are directly today related to the junk foods, and also they were speaking of television. Okay. So television is not our topic at the moment, but to junk food and television. And actually one added to the other, because the more television they watched, the more junk food they ate while watching it. So this is very, very important, and we are living in a time when we are plagued with illness and sickness. Now, it is true that many, many plagues and many, many illnesses have been eliminated by some excellent achievements of modern medical society. But at the same time, the general health of people, of Western culture, the experts will tell you, the statistics are there, that we are not a healthy nation. We are a sickly people. And there are many, many sicknesses, as I mentioned before, that develop into social problems, which we cannot close our eyes to them. Emotional problems in children. Learning problems in children. And we cannot close our eyes to where the sources might be. This also is something which is enormously important for teachers and supervisors of schools. Now, generally, every school will have a tuck shop, and every tuck shop will be full of garbage. And we are educating children how every day to stuff their body with this. Not only are they destroying their body at a time when the nourishment is needed the most, at the foundation, but they are creating habits in themselves for a lifetime. And it is no wonder that we find that when children grow up to a young age of 17, 18, or 20, or 21, many times their strength are like middle-aged people. Just as we must impose supervision over school tuck shops of Jewish schools, that they must be kosher, it is just as important, if not more important, that supervision must be imposed over those same tuck shops to teach children how to eat properly and to look for nutrition and not for the junk, like the Rambam says, kekelev v'chamor, like the dog and the donkey. So this is very, very important for us. Now that's the first area of types of food. Another area in types of food, a chazal always praised lechem, bread. And bread, they basically praised wheat bread. We find many, many places. The Gimel Mekemes Motzinu Shahalechem Yisod. That in the Torah and in the prophets and in the writings we find that the Gemara says Lechem Yisod, that bread strengthens one's body and heart and stabilizes him. Harbe Dvorim Nemru Bishapas Shachris. Gemara tells us many, many broches and milas, and it are spoken about eating good bread in the morning, at the beginning of the day. Paschitin Tev le Talmud. chitim, wheat, and wheat bread is good even for the understanding of the Gemara says. The child, the Gemara says, does not say Abba Re'ima, does not call out father and mother until he's capable of eating bread. Because when he eats bread, he's come now to that nourishment of not only of the mind but the body. Now when we speak of bread, we're speaking of real bread. Again, we are the victims of industrialization, fast foods, where our bread is a poor, artificial imitation of a bread. Today, people are becoming aware of it. The Rambam writes, Seles shenofu esei kol tzocho, achele nisharo boareach mursin. If you take flour and you refine it to the extent where no bran or fiber is left in it, is bichlala macholim roim. These are from the foods that damage a person's health. And this is what Western culture has been brought up on. Now many, many times I see young people, they sit down to a supper, or they sit down to a lunch, and we live in a fast environment, nobody has time. So who has time to wash and who has time to bench? So lead a whole meal without bread. This is a creation of Western culture. If you'll remember, your fathers and your Zaydis always said, es breut, eat bread. In the old country, it wasn't like that. Firstly, they didn't have the money to fill up on other foods. But secondly, the Chazal say, lechem lisbaya ubose lechu. When it comes to meat, that you eat. When it comes to satisfy oneself, that must be from the grains, from the bread. The fact is, we find many, many halochas, many laws in Shulchan Aruch. You can eat a meal of fish and meat and vegetables and eggs, and you don't have to wash netilas yadayim, you don't have to vashach, and you don't have to bench. In the eyes of the Chazal, that's not considered a meal. That's considered a nash. You eat a slice of bread or two slices of bread, and you eat a little meat with it or a little egg with it, then you make hametzi. You don't make brochas on anything else. Sha'alechem peiteres es hakol, because the brocha on the bread will take care of everything, and you bench. That's considered a meal. And this has many ramifications in halacha. Many, which we don't have time to go into. Because the sages understood, lechem yisei levav enosh, that bread, a healthy bread, gives stability and strength to the man. And when it comes to satisfy oneself, he must eat his bread. He wants to add things to it. He wants to nash also with it. He wants to add taste to it, then he eats other things. But halechem by ikur v'asharat also. And today, nutritionists have been coming out with a wealth of information on the importance of bread and grains, that it should be the mainstay of the meal. So that's bread. Meat in the eyes of the sages was something very healthy, very healthy. Now, if it's affected by modern industrialization, that's new complexity, see. Today there are many problems because a lot of the animals are shot with antibiotics and so forth. See? Well, that Chazal we're not speaking about, but they were speaking of meat in its natural state. Meat was considered very healthy. As I mentioned before, there was one person in the Gemara that he says he didn't have his meat last night. He wasn't able to understand the Gemara well today. So. But again, they said meat, though, you must not eat in large quantities. Meat must be eaten together with bread. It must be eaten, but one must not satisfy himself on the meat. He must satisfy himself on breads and grains. The meat must be added to it. The Rambam says if someone is poor and he can't afford meat, he says, don't worry, if he eats meat from Shabbos to Shabbos, from the nutrition point of view, it's sufficient. So meat was considered important, it is, but not where the main meal should be made up of meat, but rather of bread and grains. What are a few of the foods that is mentioned that a person should be careful of? One is dogim gedelim meluchim ha'yishonim, the large fish which were salted and aged. Vina meluchim ha'yishonim, cheeses which were salted and aged. Basar meliach ha'yoshon, meat which was salted and aged. Rambam writes this is very bad for a person, very bad. Then he writes, in general, large fish or meat which come from the very big oxen, or onions, mustard, radishes, things which are very strong. He says this is not good. It's not like the other category, but a person can eat them, but in moderation. From time to time, not too much, and particularly in the cold weather. So these were a few comments and types of foods. Let's speak about conduct while one eats. Before one eats, a person should not eat on a cold body. For example, if he wakes up and his body is still cold, he must not eat. First, he must do some physical labor, some exercise, where the body starts to warm up and to sweat. Then he should eat. He should do some physical labor or exercise, and then rest a bit. Let the body rest. And then he should eat. He should not eat while the body is cold, and he should not eat while the body is agitated. That's before he eats. While he eats, he should sit. He should sit, and he should sit quietly. He shouldn't walk while he's eating. He shouldn't stand while he's eating. He shouldn't ride while he's eating. He shouldn't work while he's eating. And these are things that we were taught in our youth. We know this. Zitz wie ein Mensch. This is why by a Jewish simcha, we prefer to sit down. Because Zitz wie ein Mensch. Sometimes, in Kinhor in South Africa, people have in their homes so many people for a simcha, it's impossible. But this is the way a person should eat. When he eats, he should eat lighter foods first and the heavier foods later. Certain foods which slow up the digestive processes, that he should eat them together with the rest of the food of the meal. Other foods which speed up the digestive systems, for example, grapes, figs, cucumbers, melons, and so forth, he should eat before the meal and then wait until he starts to digest them and then continue with the meal. I remember once I was on the plane with my Rebbetzin and we met a young lady. See, we were ordering kosher meals and she was also having a special meal. She was someone who was very concerned with health, so she had ordered a special vegetarian meal. So I think there was a mix-up in the meals or something, and she didn't get her meal, or they gave her a kosher one instead. So I remember the situation. At the end, they had to bring her a fruit. They brought her a fruit bowl from the first class. So she ate from it, and then they brought her some cheeses and other things. So she didn't eat. So I asked her why. She says, when you eat fruit or vegetables, you must wait about 15 minutes before you continue with the rest of your meal. Well, this is what the Rambam writes here. After eating, again, when a person finishes eating, he should not do work immediately. He should not walk around. Whoever walks or does physical exercise right after he eats, Rambam says he brings upon himself diseases. He must rest. So that's in regards to conduct during meeting. Now in regards to general routine. As we mentioned before, the body loves balance, it loves discipline, it loves the routine. It loves stability. And because of this, the Gemara says, Shinoi ves tchilas achere. That if a person suddenly changes his routines with the body, this is the beginning of bringing sickness upon himself. Actually, we find that changes of climate, we're all aware, winter, summer, summer, winter, all kind of flus go around, all kind of colds and so forth. The body rebels against this. As I mentioned, it battles to retain consistency. So therefore a person should keep a routine. But sometimes a person will have to change his routine because of external changes outside. And this a person must bear in mind. Therefore, it is brought. A person must not eat the same diet in the summer as he does in the winter, and in the winter as the same as in the summer. Right. In the States, we're used to extreme temperatures. In the winter, you have big oil trucks that drive up to your houses, and they pump oil into a tank that you have in your basement, and 3-4 weeks later they come again and do the same thing again, all through the winter, and you got a big furnace that's burning most of the day and most of the night to keep the house warm. In the summer, you got air conditioners that can be going 24 hours a day to keep the house cold. Cool. Now your body's the same thing. Your body labors to maintain this constant temperature and constant balance no matter what the external situations are. Now we must be cognizant of this. So therefore we cannot eat the same diet in cold weather as we eat in warm weather or hot weather. So therefore the Gemara brings, and the Rambam, that when it's cold, we should eat foods that bring warmth to the body. For example, wine is good, honey is good, spices, basar shomein, fat meats. When it's hot, we must refrain from those foods, because we're just adding heat upon heat already. And we must eat foods that will have a lesser heating effect and a more cooling effect on the body. Lighter foods. For example, the Gemara brings kaimitz. Vinegar is very good in the hot weather. And the same thing is it's in different lands. It's brought that people who live in warm lands must eat diets accordingly, and the same thing in the cold lands. And the same thing by mikra, if a person for some reason feels very overheated, he must not sit down and have a whiskey. Right? If he comes in and he feels very cold, he must not sit down and have some cold drink with ice in it. He's working against nature, he's working against his body. And we might think nothing of it, but our body doesn't. This is putting enormous pressure on the health of a person. It's for this reason that a person always should choose the foods which are most natural in that area. Now, again, has come tremendous confusion. The nutritionists write this, that because of our modern industrialization, we are capable today of shipping food from one end of the world to the other. So we have the great privilege of eating out-of-season foods, even out-of-season. But it's not necessarily so good for the body. If you go up north, you'll see that the people who live in the north eat a lot of reindeer meat. I come from the north. The reindeer is a deer, but he's the size of an ox, if not bigger. Heavy, fat meat. And that's the stable diet of northern Canadians and Eskimos. And they also eat from whales, which carry some of the most concentrated fat in any food that we know. If you go to the south, if you go down to South America or other such places, you won't find them eating those foods. Right? There they'll eat mostly fruits and vegetables and small fish. This is what nature intended. And this we must be cognizant of. Gemara says, it depends on the age of a person. The Gemara says that when a person is older, then wine and honey is good for him. But for young people, it's not good. The same thing we learned before when it comes to the seasons, that a person should not eat in the summertime the same amount of food that he'll eat in the wintertime. So this is in regards to, we must not change our routines, but many times we're obligated to change our routines in order to maintain the routine and consistency of the body. All right, this is in regards to eating. I'd like to speak a few words now in regards to the second principle we mentioned, and that's the elimination processes. Great emphasis is placed on this in the sages, because if the elimination processes are not working properly, then it brings an impurity and toxic poisons into the body. And therefore the sages state, when a person, the call of nature, you should not delay even 1 minute. A person should never eat if he feels that he must exercise his elimination processes. A person should always see that his elimination processes are in good working order and functioning very well. Now, consistent constipation, perhaps years ago, was always thought of as a discomfort. But today, modern medicine understands that consistent constipation can be causes of very serious diseases. And this is what our sages bring, that a person whose elimination processes are not functioning well, and he has consistent constipation, bad diseases can come upon a person. And therefore he should always endeavor, either through proper diet and so forth, to see that his elimination processes are functioning well. The Rambam writes, Misha Mashin Akovav, or Misha Meyav Koshin, Afila Echel Macholes Tevim, Vishomaratz Melapi Arafur, Kol Yomav Yemachovim, Bekeche Toshish. Someone who delays his elimination processes, or someone who's constantly constipated, even if he eats good foods, and he watches himself in accordance to best medical advice, he writes, all his days he will be in pain and his health will diminish. Now, probably the reason for this is because bad foods certainly bring a toxic into the body. But even good foods, in every food, there's its good part and there's its wastage, which has to be eliminated from the body. It must be excreted. So even someone who eats good foods, and he takes very good care of himself, but what good is that going to do if he has poisons and impurities constantly in the body? Now we'll go to another area, and that is what is called malocha, physical work. Now we are going to look at physical work and labor and exercise only from the aspect of physical health. We once gave a shiur on the dignity of physical work, and physical work can bring a person much joy and much sense of achievement. But tonight we're interested only in the aspect from the biological sense. We mentioned before that how important it is to work the body before one eats, so he doesn't eat on a cold body, so the body's warmed up. The Rambam writes, "Od klal acher isa bebriyas aguf." There is another principle in health. That is called zman she'odem yisanel. As long as a person labors, biyoga harbe, and he works hard physically, ve'ena saveya, and he does not live a type of luxurious, satisfied life where he doesn't have to work, umeya v'rofin, and his elimination processes are functioning, ein cheli bo'olov, he won't get sick, ve'keicha mishazik, he'll grow stronger. Now here the Rambam says, even if a person eats bad foods, we mentioned before how bad it is for a person to eat bad foods, but he says if he does a lot of physical labor, then it won't affect him. The reason for this, we can say, and I think this is what medicine would be, the medical understanding in this, because the bad foods bring poisons and toxins into the system. But a person who constantly works, firstly, the foods are burnt up and consumed quicker. Secondly, they are excreted. So they are excreted through the heat and sweat of the body. So the Rambam says, therefore, someone who does a lot of physical work, he says, he health-wise, he has it made for him. V'chol mishu yeshiv levetach ve'ena misamel. But someone who sits, he sits and he has a half a dozen servants waiting on him hand and foot, and he doesn't labor. Or someone who's mashing the kovav, like we mentioned before, that he delays his elimination processes, or they're not functioning properly. Afila echel macholas tevis, tevim, even if he eats good food, and he guards himself, but all of his days he will become weaker and weaker. Now, in their days, in the old days, we must be cognizant that the average person did an awful lot of weightlifting and gymnastics and walking and jogging in the normal course of day. There was a man here, there's a man in Johannesburg who told me once, he came here in the 1930s from Lithuania, and he says there was no running water in the house. You wanted water, you had to go outside to the back of the house to the well, draw up some water. In the winter, he had a problem. He had to dig the snow and maybe sometime break the ice. You wanted a hot water, then you took the bucket of water and you brought it in the house, you put it on the stove. But how did you turn the stove on? You had to go maybe shovel coal or bring in logs. They didn't necessarily have a half a dozen servants cutting the logs for them. This was how you made a glass of water. See, the Gemara always spoke of a distance. How did it measure distance? In how many days walk it was. For example, the distance between this city and that city was a 3-day walk. A man could walk so many miles per day, so the distance between one city and another was 3 days walk, 5 days walk. We would measure from here to Pretoria, see, how many days walk was it? This is how you traveled. Even if you traveled by horseback, those of you who have rode a horse, you'll see it's not a Mercedes. There's plenty of physical exercise that goes into it. So they didn't have to look for artificial means of exercise. And the body got plenty of the much-needed exercise. Today we live in a system, in a society, where we only look for conveniences. Not only does a person not want to walk, but drive, but he wants the type of garage that he won't have to get out of his car to open up the garage door. And not only does he want that, but he wants the type of garage and house that there will be an adjoining door from the kitchen into the garage right next to the pantry, so when they bring in the groceries, they'll only have to walk a few steps. This is our type of living. We look for conveniences after conveniences. What we do not realize that these conveniences might be shortening our lives. They might be shortening our lives, and they might be, even the years that we have left, they might be giving us unhealthy years. Because physical work and labor is a bracha to the body. It's a great blessing from many, many aspects, and certainly from the physical aspect. Now, we come to a second situation. Modern science has come to this realization that we're becoming a nation, like the Rambam writes, Yeshiv Levetach. We sit in luxury, if we don't have servants, we have robots and machines waiting on us hand and foot. And the body's not working. And we have to exercise. So we have to create for ourselves all types of artificial exercises. And now we're coming to the realization that these artificial exercises might not be so good for us as the natural exercises that the body was made to be. Doctors have told me, who have been in this area, they said that the best exercise for a person is an exercise that the body was created for. And the type of exercise, again, not that a person who never didn't do exercise for 30 days, all of a sudden he's jogging 10, 20 kilometers a day. Or all of a sudden he's going to gym and weightlifting and everything else. Look, there are some people who are built for it, and some people did it from their youth, and they're experts in it. That's another thing. But today there's all kind of conferences. Actually, there was one conference going on just recently in America. A whole debate between there's an area of medicine today that specializes in these sport-related medical areas, where there's a whole debate going on if these are really productive or counterproductive for the body. But at any rate, doctors have told me that the best exercise is the exercise that the body was naturally made for and something that's built into everyday living. See, everyday living. For example, a person who walks, he always walks to work, or he walks here, or he walks there. Or a person who constantly walks two or three or four flights to his office. See, and so forth. But whatever the particular answer might be, we must realize the problem. That one of the prerequisites of the physical body, it must be worked. The more it's worked physically, the stronger it becomes, and it's good for the entire process of the physical human being. Now again, we're not talking about the other bonuses, fringe benefits that might be coming to it in other areas. And this is something that we have to build into our lives and into our children. I know people that are able to walk today, in their 40s, 50s, 60 years old, they're able to walk hours. They can walk 2 hours, 3 hours at a time, at a good pace, and it doesn't affect them at all. They'll tell you they were brought up that way. Again, see, if a child is brought up this way, then it stays with them. Now, one final area. And that's sleep. The Rambam writes, "Afil b'shusho yoshein." If a person sleeps in order to rest himself, in order that he should not shelo yechle, in order that he should not get sick, and a sick person cannot serve Hashem, then that sleep becomes mitzvah. That becomes serving Hashem. The Rambam writes this at the end in Perek Gimel Halacha Gimel. Today, perhaps, I'm not an expert on this, so I can't say, but I know it's a very mysterious area. But perhaps one of the most mysterious areas of science is a person's sleep. For some reason, great emphasis of study have not been placed on the curative powers and what happens to a person when he sleeps. There are clinics in the world that specialize in research in this. Maybe more emphasis is being placed on now. I think I read an article recently on this. But this is a very mysterious area, but a very miraculous area. The Medrash tells us, Boroshina Larape, sleep was created, one of the reasons, to cure the person. We know from our own experiences, you go to sleep, and you got this problem and that problem. besides the psychological and emotional and mental problems, you got this physical problem and that physical problem and this physical problem, you get a good night's sleep and you wake up and you're a new person. Now what happened to you? Nothing happened. Well, you didn't have any doctors working on you, and you didn't take any medicine, you slept. We know that a person, when he lacks sleep, you say, what's the matter? You look terrible. See? All of a sudden he looks terrible. When he's fresh, he looks wonderful. Now these looks are not deceiving. They're telling us something. The fact is, the Gemara tells us that why in the morning do we wash our hands and we make a brocha, and at no other time do we? So it's the opinion of the Rashba. Because bir yechadosho, we are a new being in the morning. When we sleep, our soul departs to Hashem. When we wake up, the soul comes back with new life. And the body wakes up with new life. And we are like a newborn. And a good night's sleep, you experience that. Most of the time you even forget about the problems that were bothering you the day before. The Rambam, enough emphasis is not placed on sleep. And I'm sure that as these medical studies continue, they will find more. Recently, I read that they're relating it to strain of heart and so forth. A person, when he's refreshed, he can tackle the most difficult task with ease. He could study the most difficult piece of Gemara with ease. When he's tired and fatigued, the simplest task becomes unbearable. Now, who knows what strain that places on the emotions of a person, on the organs of a person, on the heart of the person, on the mind of the person. And therefore, great emphasis should be placed. It's a very simple commodity, see, and a good night's sleep. Now, this is also one of the ills of Western culture, because we have the great brocha of electricity and television. In the old days, people didn't stay up too long after dark. If you ever spent a week in the Drakensberg or some other remote place where there's no electricity, you find that the first couple of nights you fumble around with candles, and after that you decide, go to sleep and get up when the sun comes up and you'll be able to do whatever you want to do 10 times as fast. And it doesn't take you long before you're scheduling yourself not with the artificial lights, but with the lights HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to the world to control the world. But we have Western culture, what is known as nightlife. South Africa, Baruch Hashem, is not that much involved in nightlife as other areas in Western culture. Say. And we teach children. Actually, a student once called me. He wanted me to speak at the campus. So I told him I had to give him a topic, the name of a topic. So I said, I'll call you back this evening. How late can I call you? He says, till 1 o'clock. Okay, so this is the life of students. Okay? The sun can set at 6 or 7, but we don't set till 12 or 1 o'clock. Now the Rambam writes, he says, Dai leilodim lishan shlish shuhu shmeideshos. That a person, it should be sufficient, again for a normal person, to sleep 1/3 of the day, which would be 8 hours. Ye beseif halaylo kedei shite mitchilose shinose ad shetala Hashem eskeshos. But he says, those 8 hours, he says, should be, so you wake up with the sun. Which would mean that if the sun would get up at 5, then we should be in bed at 9. So we get up at 5. The world was made to be basically guided by the sun. This is the Morah Godel. This is the lights of the world. Again, because of the artificiality of the Western culture, we throw ourselves all off, especially with such things as television. Now this is very important for people, because who knows how much strain they are placing on their bodies when they go around fatigued. A child, when he's tired, he'll go to sleep, finished. And who knows how much damage they do emotionally. And then the spin-off in regards to their jobs or regards to their families or social diseases and so forth. Because they are no longer to cope. And the cause might have been, the original cause might have been fatigue. Now it becomes complex and it's all different other problems. And this is very important for students of yeshiva. Students of the yeshiva, they like to read biographies of great people who learned around the clock. The Vilna Gaon used to sleep 2 hours in a 24-hour period. But what they have to realize is that the Vilna Gaon was not diminishing his health. He was not damaging his health. If he was damaging his health, then he wouldn't have done it. The Taz in Eben Ezra writes that if a person stays up late and the next day he's tired, he says, Yotzeschora Bethseder. So he says, what does he gain from it? He stays up late learning Torah, and the next day he's tired, he says, his reward is lost. He says, had he gone to bed early and gotten a better night's sleep, then the next day he would be able to learn everything that he learned in the late hours of the night, if not more, and at the same time without causing affliction to his body. It tells the Rosh Yeshiva, my Rebbe Ramotel Gifter, he took a contingent of the Telzi Yeshiva to Eretz Yisrael. And there he set up a branch of the Telzi Yeshiva. And he wrote that he came to see the great Stipler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was of our generation, only recently passed away, but was considered from the great Talmid Chachomim and the great Tzadikim, the righteous people of the generation. And he came in and he says the Stipler accosted him. Why? He says, I understand that your Talmidim are learning late at night in the Beis HaMedrash. So the Gifter said, yeah, they're learning with great hasporah, they're learning with great diligence. So Stipler says, don't let them do that. Do not allow them to do that. They will become sick. They will harm their health to the point that if not now, later and later years, they won't be able to learn. And he told Rav Gifter, don't let them do that. So again, we must keep everything in proper perspective. I know many, many cases of people merely from fatigue, because of not good sufficient sleep, become depressed, they become pessimistic, and then this leads from one problem to another problem to another problem until it can come to a point where it's irreversible. So that's in regards to sleep. In summation, the Rambam writes, he says as follows. Now, in his chapter, as he deals with a few other areas also, which we don't have time, but he writes, Kol hamani gatzme bidrochim elu. Whoever conducts himself in these ways, sheheirenu, that I am instructing. Ani orev loy. He writes, I shall be the guarantor. I will be his guarantor. She'enoi boi lidei chele kol yomov. That he will not come to sickness all of his days. Achi yaskin harbe biyomesh. Until he grows very old and he dies. Ve'ene tzorech lereife. He will not need a doctor. Via gufe sholem. And his body will be complete and strong. Ve'emir al buri kol yomov. And he will be healthy all of his days. This is what the Rambam writes. He says, if a person will follow these principles that I tell him, ani orev loy, I am a guarantor. The Rambam, incidentally, was a great doctor also. So he says, I am a guarantor that he will grow, be healthy and strong all of his life. Except, elim kein hayaguf ramit chilus b'yose, unless he was born with a sickly body, or if he was rogel b'minim in aminoges aroyim itchilus melaretor, or if he did not follow these ways in his youth, so now in mid journey he wants to change. All right, then I can't guarantee that it'll help totally. It certainly will help, but not. Or in tovei makas dever or makas betzures leilam, or if heaven forbid a plague a plague, a drought would come to the world. See? But otherwise, if not for extreme external causes, like plague or drought, and if a person is born of normal health, and from his youth he conducts himself in these ways, so the Rambam says, Ani Oravdei, I am a guarantor that he will be healthy and strong all of his days until he grows very old and dies. Now it's interesting, very interesting, that the Rambam writes, Ve'ene tzorech l'reife, he will not need a doctor. Now this is something very important. Many times we have complaints on our doctors. Say, why didn't my doctor tell me this? Why didn't he tell me how to eat and how to do this and how to do that? It was the viewpoint of this, of the Chazal, of the sages, that a doctor is to treat sicknesses. A doctor is to cure diseases. And I think this is also the viewpoint of the medical association. A doctor is to cure illness. A healthy person is Eina Tzeirech Haraifa. A healthy person won't need a doctor. A doctor is for sick people. To keep yourself from getting sick, that's not the doctor's responsibility. That's your responsibility. When you are sick and you have to be cured, then it becomes the doctor's responsibility. So a person must not think that the doctor must tell me what to eat and what not to eat, and how to exercise and how not to exercise, and what time I should go to bed and what time I should get up. No, that's for your mother and father to teach you. That's for a mother and father to teach a child. That's for a person to teach himself. And if he lives properly, he will not need a doctor. A doctor is to cure sicknesses. A person was not made to be sick, unless, heaven forbid, something happens. Now this is very interesting, because this means that if we would place emphasis, more emphasis on not getting sick than on curing sicknesses, we would be far better off. We abuse ourselves totally. We become physical, emotional, and mental wrecks. We become social wrecks. And then we come to the doctors and to the psychologists and to the psychiatrists, and we want to be cured. If we place emphasis on how to live physically and emotionally and mentally and spiritually, then it won't be necessary to come to the doctors and to the psychologists and to the psychiatrists, or to the sociologists. Except in rare instances, because of unavoidable causes. Now, if you look at Western culture, it's just the opposite. Billions and billions of dollars are spent in building hospitals, developing medicines. Medicine is one of the biggest industries in the world. Why should medicine be a big industry in the world when medicine are for sick people? What about the healthy people? The answer is, we're a sick people today. Developing medicines, subsidizing medical universities to create doctors, billions and billions is spent for that. If just a portion of that money was taken from there and would be spent by governments and by other bodies that are in such a position to do that, to control foods and drugs, get junk foods off the markets, to control the same thing, driving. If less money was spent at the end of the highway, where the accident already took place, and take some of that money and spend it at the beginning of the highway on safe driving restrictions and proper education, or an education of to educate youth in health ways, in proper living, or educate people in proper morals. Today we have the plague of AIDS. Western culture finds that they don't know what to do. What is it better? to spend the money to cure the AIDS, or to spend the money to eliminate the cost. The cause, teach people morals. Sometimes they feel, now, let them live the same way they're living, and we'll try to treat the AIDS. We live in a society that is not interested in preventives. They're not interested in that. They want the junk food. They want the alcohol. They want driving along highways at 120 kilometers an hour because commerce depends on it. And they want drugs. And so they want to live the way they're continuing to live. And we'll take care of it at the other end. So therefore, billions have to be spent on the research of medicine in hospitals and universities. If the billions or even a fraction of that would be spent at the beginning of the road, they would find all of a sudden that they don't need so many hospitals and they don't need so much medicine, because healthy people are not supposed to need medicine. And they won't need so many doctors and they won't need so many universities to produce them. And think of all of the money on top of that that they would save. Now, why is it that way? It's because of the hachochma min ha'elam, because we have lost wisdom from the world. Because I'll say, Ezehu chochem, who is a wise person? Hareya es ha'meled, he who sees what will grow out of a situation. We are not interested to look what will grow out of a situation and therefore prevent it at its cause. We are not interested in eliminating causes. We would rather let the cause take place. Let the disease come, and then we will cure it, or attempt to cure it at the other end. And this, unfortunately, or tragically, is our Western culture. But Chazal tell us, like the Rambam here is saying, be a chochem, be a wise person, see the nightly. If you eat properly, you won't get indigestion. If you don't have indigestion, you won't need medicine to cure it. See, if you exercise properly, you sleep properly, and so forth and so on, you'll be healthy. If you're healthy, you won't need a rifle doctor, because doctor is for disease. But a great portion, not all, but a great portion of diseases are self-imposed. They are brought upon a person, upon himself. So this gives us an overview of what Ar-Chazal tell us in regards to the human body, how we must care for it, and we must constantly remember that the manifestation and the ramifications of this are great. Because any disorder in any area of the body will manifest itself in almost every other area. If there's a physical disorder, it cannot help but sending ripples through the emotional, mental, and spiritual part of the person, because a person is one. He's a synthesis of one. He was made perfect. And this is how we were created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's our responsibility. Okay? And to instill in ourselves, in our children, the responsibility to guide themselves in this way in order to be tam v'sholem, perfect and in balance, in order to serve the Creator, which gave us this great gift. Thank you.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za, or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.